From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Now, here's your host, Mark Kepler.
If you want to carry a concealed weapon in California, you have to get a license first. Granting those licenses, however, is left to individual county sheriffs and municipal police departments. The state's vague criteria has led to inconsistent application of local rules and created an unpredictable environment when it comes to concealed carry licenses in California. Should or can the rules for California's concealed carry permits be changed? We'll ask Elaine Howell, California State Auditor.
We'll also hear from Stanislaus County Sheriff Adam Christensen, Fresno County Sheriff Margaret Mims, and Tulare County Sheriff Mike Boudreau.
California's concealed carry permits, the Wild West of permitting?
Additional funding for the Matty Report made possible by a grant from the wonderful company, harvesting health and happiness around the world. Chevron's Coalinga oil field and Fresno County have been doing side by side for over 100 years. Learn more at doers.com. From the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Matty Institute, it's the Matty Report with Executive Director of the Matty Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. If you want to have a license to carry a concealed weapon in California, you have to get a license. How you get a license, however, varies widely throughout California, according to our guest, California State Auditor Elaine Howell, who can help explain the state of concealed weapon permits in California. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Matty Report.
Thank you.
So, you note in your report that California is a, quote, may issue, not a, quote, shall issue state when it comes to concealed carry weapons. What does that mean?
What that means is local law enforcement, either the local police department or the sheriff's department, there's four criteria they need to use, but they have the flexibility to determine what they expect from an individual to prove that they've met those four qualifications. So there's a lot of flexibility throughout the state as to whether or not which local law jurisdiction will issue concealed weapons.
Okay, so there are certain things people call prohibited persons, quote unquote, who are not permitted to carry a concealed weapon regardless. Who are they?
Right. Prohibited persons in California are individuals who would not even be eligible to have a firearm at all, never mind carry it as a concealed weapon. These are individuals, convicted felons, individuals who have been deemed mentally incompetent, have had issues where they've been in a medical facility. Medical facilities are required to report that information to the Department of Justice at the state level. But part of the process that local law enforcement uses to determine whether to issue a concealed weapon is getting information from justice, and that will tell them whether or not this person should be prohibited from even having a firearm.
Yeah, you're not saying this person's acting strangely. You're saying this person has been diagnosed as having a psychiatric problem.
Right. So it's okay. Either a mental health facility where that person has been housed for a few days or for a week or whatever, has had treatment for mental health issues, or a court has made a determination that someone is mentally incompetent to stand trial. That information is put into the state's database to say this person is prohibited from owning a firearm.
Well, let me ask you this. Is someone's criminal history an automatically disqualifying factor everywhere?
Not necessarily an automatic disqualifying factor. Certainly a convicted felon does not have the ability to have a concealed weapon or a firearm in California, but the local law enforcement, again, has some flexibility as to who they issue concealed weapons to.
Okay, so for those eligible to carry a concealed weapon, what does the state law require before licensing? You were talking about four factors.
Right. There are four specific factors. It's good moral character, good cause, reason you need a concealed weapon. You have to be a resident of the locality for which you're trying to get the concealed weapon, and a certain amount of training in the use of a firearm so that we know you know how to use a weapon if you want a concealed weapon.
I'm listening to you with those four criteria. They seem very broad. I mean, good moral character, good cause. I mean, residency and firearms training is a little bit vague. So a little fuzzy here. So let's talk about good cause. If there are no regulations that further define that term, it would seem that the licensing agencies have a lot of discretion.
Absolutely.
And potential for a lot of disparity from county to county. Is that what you found?
Absolutely what we found. We looked at three places, Sacramento, San Diego, and LA, and we saw wide variations in what those entities require of an individual applying for a concealed weapon. Good cause in Sacramento is I fear for my life or the safety of my family. In Los Angeles, it's much more strict. In San Diego, if you say you're fearful for your personal safety, they need to see a restraining order. They need to see some kind of protective order that's been put out there by the court. So it's more restrictive than Sacramento. So there's a lot of flexibility throughout the state as to what is good cause.
It's not surprising that because Sacramento counties is kind of vague and loose, there are more permits issued in Sacramento County.
Significantly more from the three entities we looked at. Okay. Sacramento had a much higher number of concealed weapons licenses that they've issued.
The other thing they got, another one of these kind of ambiguous terms, is good moral character. How is that defined? Is that a problem?
It's not specifically defined. Again, there's flexibility. What we saw at the three entities that we looked at, certainly they're getting criminal history information from the Department of Justice. They're looking at that. They're determining, has the person had DUIs? Has the person had a lot of, as they call, engagement or interaction with law enforcement?
But there's not a uniform checklist that everybody uses.
But there is not a uniform checklist. There is a lot of flexibility with respect to good cause, good moral character, for sure.
Yeah, and I think what you're saying that was interesting was Los Angeles specifically does it on a case-by-case basis. They really have, it's very loose. Mm-hmm. Okay, so how long is a concealed carry permit good for in California?
A concealed carry permit is good typically for 2 years in California. There can be circumstances where it's less time than that, but typically it's a 2-year license.
And judges, I understand, I was reading your report, judges actually can have it up to 3 years.
That's correct. There are some individuals in the law enforcement community or part of the law enforcement community, and judges are some of those. And in Los Angeles, we saw the vast majority of the licenses that they issued were for individuals in the law enforcement community.
Okay. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about some of those vague criteria, how that can be addressed through good policies. Of course, those good policies have to be followed. That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. We're talking about concealed carry permits with California State Auditor Elaine Howell. You know, it's not just that state criteria for issuing concealed carry permits are subjective and vague, but local county sheriff policies to provide some measure of consistency are often ignored. So you were looking at three departments, L.A., San Diego, and Sacramento, mm-hmm. that failed to follow their own policies. And the starkest example of that was Los Angeles. What did you find?
That's correct. So as we discussed a few minutes ago, there's a lot of flexibility in the law. So each particular entity can establish what their own criteria is as far as someone meeting good cause. So as you said, we looked at L.A., Sacramento, and San Diego. In L.A., and again, we looked at about 25 cases, 15 initial people
applying a sample
for their first license, 10 renewals,
right,
to get both parts of the population. In L.A., we found for good cause, out of the 25 we looked at, for 24 of them, they didn't even follow their own policy for ensuring that that person demonstrated good cause.
96%.
96%. Only one case out of 25 did they get the appropriate support for good cause.
So they're saying clear evidence of this danger that you're supposed to present, but it's just words on a piece of paper.
They're not really expecting the applicant to prove that there's good cause for that concealed weapon. Residency requirement. None of the 25 showed any kind of...
Well, you were talking apologies. For Los Angeles, though, you were talking about... So I found it really interesting. They also had something about, hey, you're not supposed to give it based on occupation.
Right.
And you found that they do give it based on occupation.
Oh, the vast majority. I think there were 197 licenses that we looked at the time frame we looked at. And of all those, I think only 9 were individuals who were outside law enforcement. Anybody within, again, the law enforcement community, judges, as you talked about earlier, retired police, et cetera, they get the license.
Yeah,
they
actually,
get the concealed carry.
In your report, you looked at 25 of these license permits. 22 of the 25 went to people in law enforcement. So that's 88%, if my math is correct.
Right.
Interesting. LA had a lot of problems. They weren't alone by any means. So you also found Sacramento also issued license without complying to their own internal standards. What did you find with Sacramento?
Sacramento, we found issues with good moral character. There were a handful, about 3 out of the 25. Also residency. So you need to prove that residency is either you reside in the county or you do most of your business during the day in that particular county. You have to demonstrate one or the other to prove residency. But for Sacramento, we identified 8 where they didn't have the documentation in the files we were looking at to prove that those individuals were either residents of the county or prove that most of their
business.
So that's
almost a third.
Almost a third of the cases.
Okay. San Diego, not to be outdone. They didn't always comply with their policies when it came to issuing and renewing licenses. What was the problem in San Diego?
The biggest issue we identified in San Diego was residency, again, 11 out of the 25, but there were also a couple of instances where they didn't have sufficient training, evidence that the person had received training in use of a weapon, and certainly in one case, the good cause. So across the board, all three were failing to meet the 4 requirements for all the permits we looked at.
And there's also, apparently we're talking about San Diego, at least specifically, about supervisory approval. I mean, watching what the staff is doing, it doesn't seem to be happening.
Right. We didn't see evidence of supervisory review. We think that's a good control in any process, but certainly a concealed carry weapon permit is an important thing that these local entities make sure they're following the protocol so that when they do provide that license, they've crossed the T's, dotted the I's.
Okay. When you were talking earlier about, you know, who gets a concealed carry permit, who doesn't, you're talking about folks that are prohibited persons, not supposed to get it. Are there procedures in place to track such revocations when people lose their license because they're now convicted of a felony or whatever? Isn't that supposed to go to the State Department of Justice? Is that happening?
Right, and that's another area that we felt was important to look at. It's like, okay, you've issued this license, this permit to this individual, but as we talked about a little bit ago, prohibited person. So if I end up being a convicted felon, that information should be in the Department of Justice database. Same thing with someone who's deemed mentally incompetent or has received mental health services who no longer should be permitted to have a weapon, concealed or otherwise. That information goes to DOJ. DOJ sends that information to local law enforcement. So Sacramento, San Diego, LA would receive that and say, you need to revoke this individual's license because he or she was convicted of a felony.
Right.
And then what the local entities are required to do is revoke the license and then report back to DOJ. We took care of it.
And it sounds like there are some gaps in that process.
There are some gaps in that process.
Okay, the last thing, which is kind of a small, you acknowledge it's a small part, but the general fund budget, how much does this cost counties to do this? None of the programs were able to show that either they operated at a surplus or a deficit. Because they're not tracking, it seems like, expenditures for this program. Why is that happening?
Well, Sacramento did a better job than the other two entities. They actually do track their costs, and they were showing a deficit for this particular program. But what we did is we looked at this program compared to the entire budget. So, for example, Sacramento, they do run a deficit, but the Sheriff's Department's overall budget, they have a surplus, so they're able to cover the costs.
Right.
And Sheriff Jones thinks this is an important program, so he continues to support it. LA and San Diego could not tell us how much.
No
they
idea.
Are not tracking the costs for this particular program.
It's small, but they're not tracking. That, I guess,
right.
is the point. Well, up next, what are some of the ways we can ensure more consistency and transparency in the way concealed carry permits are actually given out? That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. We're talking with California State Auditor Elaine Howe about how concealed carry permitting can be improved. So after reviewing these jurisdictions and the way they gave out their concealed carry permits, did you conclude that the state law needs to be changed according to the criteria used to give out those permits?
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, we really struggled with that. We went back and forth, but certainly good cause is an issue that the legislature has grappled with and struggled with. We did not end up concluding that any of the state law needed to change because of we had conversations not just with the three entities we audited, but a variety of law enforcement throughout California. They really wanted the flexibility to be able to establish protocols that represent their constituents in their jurisdiction. They feel that they have a better read of the community. So we did not end up suggesting that the statute
so
be changed.
So it sounds like the statute should be left alone, according to you, but maybe tighten up on some of the policies.
Absolutely.
Okay, so one of your recommendations was improving the way these licenses are given out. And specifically, you said jurisdictions should align their licensing decisions with their local policies.
That's right.
So it seems to me, I'm reading your report, that the answer seems to be as simple as just having written procedures.
Right, right. And a lot of the entities we visited, Sacramento in particular, Los Angeles, did not have specific policies in place, written policies for their staff to follow to make sure that if good cause, this is what we expect to see. Residency, this is, we need two or three examples, either a mortgage statement, a utility bill, but we need to have at least two or three pieces of evidence to demonstrate that this person is a resident of Sacramento County, LA County, et cetera. So we really expected to see very strong procedures, policies that staff could follow, and we didn't see that. So that's what we recommended.
You know, that kind of begs the question, do you think, for residency you're talking about, do you think there needs to be a specific list of approved documents for residency that everybody could use?
Well, there could be certainly a standard checklist, but I think, again, it's up to the different entity. And most of the entities, like Sacramento, are asking for two examples. So you could have a list of five or six. What that also needs to be available to the applicant. So the applicant would know, what do I have to bring in to prove residency? And it's not going to be just 1 month. It may have to be, I want 2 different months, and I want a month.
I live here. I mean it.
I promise you, I'm a resident of Sacramento, but I want to see a utility bill from January and from June to show that you've been a resident for a long time in our particular county.
Another one of those criteria is firearms training. Now, right now, there's a maximum number of hours that you can be trained,
right.
Which I found interesting, 16 hours. Should there be a minimum? I guess would be one question. The second one is, what about types of training? For example, if someone's been in the military, they've received firearms training, you know, should that automatically qualify?
Mm-hmm. And again, it depended upon the jurisdiction. You're right, there is a cap. It seemed odd to us, but that's the way the statute reads. There's a maximum of 16 hours of training.
So if I'm a jurisdiction and I think 20 hours might be more appropriate, I can't do that.
You can't necessarily do that.
Okay.
But some of the jurisdiction did require the 16 hours. One jurisdiction, I think it was San Diego, only required 8 hours. But again, to use a firearm, you would think you would want to use the maximum amount of training for that particular individual.
It's just interesting on that one, though, just as an aside. It's just interesting. I've never seen where someone's created a maximum amount. Usually
right.
It's a minimum amount.
Right.
It's interesting, right. And may want to wonder why that is.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's just interesting. You also talk about supervisors should routinely review renewals to ensure that policies are followed. How often do you think supervisors should be involved in kind of checking?
Mm-hmm. Well, just like any process, it would be supervisors. You're not looking at every single claim, unless it's a small number. I mean, let's talk about L.A., huge county. They only issued 197 licenses, so how difficult would it be to review every single one? Not all of those are renewals. Some of them are initial, but still, you could look at all of them. Sacramento, they're issuing thousands of licenses, so they may have to select a sample, like we do as an auditor, to make sure that the different staff who are implementing this program are following the policies. Again, you got to have written policies for staff to follow, but then let's check, make sure staff are in fact following them.
Which is interesting. The point you're making is, for example, if Sacramento is issuing these permits, once you get a concealed carry in Sacramento, you can carry it throughout California.
Right.
So I would think then it's the lowest common denominator. Then whatever county is the easiest to get a firearm is the one that really dictates policy for the entire
mm-hmm.
state.
Right, and I think law enforcement takes that very seriously. I don't think they're not considering that, because certainly, yeah, an individual who's a resident of Sacramento County gets a concealed carry, goes to San Francisco for the weekend, can carry that weapon as a concealed weapon. They are licensed in Sacramento, but they are free to go anywhere in the state of California.
Even though the residents of San Francisco may not want to have people with concealed carry,
that's correct.
They can still do that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, up next, we're going to talk a little bit about how the county sheriffs responded to this report. That conversation in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. We're talking with California State Auditor Elaine Howe about a recent report her office issued on concealed carry permitting in California. Although your report was generally accepted by the sheriff's departments, offices, they expressed some concern. So let's talk mm-hmm. a little bit about that. The mm-hmm. Sacramento County Sheriff, for example, mm-hmm. challenged the very basis for your report and strongly suggested that it was motivated by one mm-hmm. assembly member's mm-hmm. longtime animus against concealed carry permits. How do you respond?
Mm-hmm. Well, our response to the sheriff, certainly any audit that we are required to do goes through the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. Certainly Mr. McCarty, Assemblymember McCarty from Sacramento, requested this audit through the committee, but this is a bicameral committee, 14 members, 7 senators, 7
so both
assembly
houses.
Members, both houses, both parties.
Both parties, okay.
Consider the requests, take a look at it, and we're not just looking at Sacramento County, we're looking at Los Angeles, we're looking at San Diego. Those were specified in the request, so it's much broader, and we get our direction from the legislature. And again, bicameral committee, we're a nonpartisan entity.
So this wasn't an assembly member calling up your office and saying, hey, do the report on
Absolutely
Sacramento.
Absolutely not. It doesn't work that way.
Okay. So the Sacramento sheriff also stated in his response, I'm going to quote this, while I can generally appreciate that it would be much easier for an outside group completely unfamiliar with the process to view files which are identical and nicely indexed, it by no means indicates that the residency and backgrounds weren't adequately established in every single case. And this is what I found particularly interesting. Policies, whether verbal or written, are meant to be guidelines and certainly cannot apply in every circumstance. How do you respond to that?
Well, we disagree. We certainly think that policies and procedures are critically important, not only in Sacramento, but for every jurisdiction that's going to issue a concealed carry weapon. As you indicated a few minutes ago, you issue a concealed carry permit to a resident of Sacramento County, they can go anywhere in the state of California and carry that weapon. So each local law enforcement entity has a responsibility to do due diligence, and that includes policies, procedures that staff follow. So you can provide assurance to the community, the entire state, that we are exercising due diligence before we issue this permit as a concealed carry weapon.
There was also something a little you probably noticed in his response, too. He says that we do have policies covering almost every facet of the permitting process. So he's even admitting that he doesn't cover the entire
thing. That's correct.
In his own response. Okay, so the L.A. County Sheriff also strongly disagreed that their program is, quote, marked by consistent failure, unquote, that it follows its policies. According to the L.A. County Sheriff, their policy only requires, quote, convincing evidence, unquote, of good cause, not, quote, a collection of documentation, unquote. How do you respond to that criticism?
Well, it's similar response to Sacramento. I mean, Los Angeles was of the three entities, had the most issues that we identified. I mean, when you're looking at 25 cases and you're looking for good cause, and out of 24 out of 25, you don't have sufficient information to demonstrate good cause. You don't have sufficient information to demonstrate that individual is a resident of LA County. That is a problem for us. I think that any reasonable person would have a concern about that. And again, they need to exercise due diligence. They need to develop written policies and then follow those policies so that they can provide the public the assurance that we are issuing concealed weapons, but we're doing it prudently and fairly for the safety of the public in California.
What's interesting, so in LA County, so to have convincing evidence of good cause, and you found that in 40% of the cases that you reviewed, they didn't even assert that they faced a specific personal threat.
That's correct.
So
that's
pretty interesting.
That's
so
correct.
You can have a policy, but you got to enforce it.
Right.
The LA County Sheriff also disagreed that licenses are unduly granted to those working in the criminal justice system.
So we did not conclude that. Okay. they're suggesting that that's what our conclusion was. No, but the statistics speak for themselves. I mean, certainly law enforcement, the law enforcement community, again, including judges and others, are the primary individuals that are receiving these concealed carry weapons. And we don't have a problem with that. What we have a problem with is you've got to make sure those individuals demonstrate the same four characters as any person who's not in the law enforcement community that wants a concealed carry weapon permit.
Okay, the last thing was San Diego. They chimed into San Diego County Sheriff. While recognizing that the licensing program doesn't pay for itself, they argued there are legitimate reasons for keeping the fees low. Are you recommending higher fees for concealed carry?
Well, the state law allows an entity to charge $100 for a new license, and it up to covering their costs. So if their costs exceed $100, they can charge up to $100. But there's also a provision in state law that allows them to increase that with the Consumer Price Index.
Cost of living.
And cost of living, essentially. So we said if some of you are spending more than you're bringing in, you can increase those fees. Some of the pushback was, oh, well, then fewer people are going to apply for permits. We don't necessarily agree with that. If you're willing to apply for a permit at $100, are you going to be willing to spend $125, $130? Yes, you are. You're paying hundreds of dollars for the weapon, in the first place.
All right. Well, that's a very interesting conversation. I want to thank California State Auditor Elaine Howe. If you want to stay current on state and local politics, you can follow the Maddie Institute on Facebook, Twitter, or log on to our website.
Up next, what are the standards in Valley counties when it comes to issuing concealed carry permits? And are Valley requirements becoming the de facto standards for concealed carry permits in California? We'll ask Stanislaus County Sheriff Adam Christensen, Fresno County Sheriff Margaret Mims, and Tulare County Sheriff Mike Boudreau.
You're listening to the Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, on KMJ.
Welcome back. It's Mark Kepler with the Maddie Institute. As we've been discussing, issuing concealed carry permits is predominantly a local matter, mostly done by county sheriffs. How do Valley sheriffs feel about California's concealed carry laws? Our guests are tasked with making that decision in their counties. We have Fresno County Sheriff Margaret Mims. Welcome, Sheriff Mims.
Thank you for having me.
We have Tulare County Sheriff Mike Boudreau. Welcome, Sheriff Boudreau.
Thank you very much.
And Stanislaus County Sheriff Adam Christensen. Welcome, Sheriff Christensen.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, so Sheriff Mims, Fresno County, let's start with you. You know, we were discussing in the earlier segment that state law allows county sheriffs to issue concealed carry licenses to members of the general public upon proof of four things: an applicant's good moral character, if good cause exists for the license; three, for applicants who reside within the county; and four, provide the applicant has completed some firearms training. Now, state law doesn't really define, quote unquote, good moral character. How do you define it in Fresno County?
We take a look at contacts with law enforcement. So we take a look at the arrests as well as convictions. And we get that through fingerprint checks through DOJ. We do, applicants go through a live scan process. And an interview process, of course. And the interviewers for the Fresno County Sheriff's Department, they're all retired detectives. So when they vet somebody, I'm pretty assured that they've done a quality investigation into their background.
No, you said you check both arrests and convictions. Do you distinguish between arrests and convictions? Because you could be arrested and not convicted.
Correct. And for instance, if somebody gets arrested, it still could be an indication of their decision-making skills. So even on arrests, we pull the reports from whatever agency conducted that arrest and read the reports and see what happened.
Okay, take a close look at it. So, Sheriff Christensen, in Stanislaus County, how do you do it? When you're trying to evaluate good moral character, what do you look at?
I agree with Sheriff Mims. I look at criminal history. I look at things like good judgment, common sense, and our investigators meet with applicants as well to discuss their application, to make sure that everything they've submitted is accurate and that they've disclosed everything. And then through that background process, we determine eligibility.
Yeah, and so, Sheriff Boudreau, in Tulare County, what do you look at when you're looking at good moral character? How do you define that?
I would really have to mirror what my counterparts have said. We do the exact same thing. We do add one little caveat. We send out references to neighbors, friends. The applicant is required to put in three references where our investigators go out.
Can they be family members?
They can. They can be family members. I think you'd be shocked at maybe some of the responses we get. I wouldn't argue that.
Don't give him a concealed carry.
Yeah, don't give him one. And, you know, we take those very seriously, but I would mirror exactly what the other sheriffs have said.
Yeah, so Sheriff Mitchell, let me stay with you for a little bit. You know, there's something called prohibited persons that are not permitted to get these CCW licenses. Is someone's criminal history an automatic disqualifying event? Is that automatically you're out if you have any kind of criminal record?
Well, it really falls to the sheriff to make that decision, which he feels or she feels is best for their county. I know that we've had people that have had some issues where they were convicted criminally in court for, say, a misdemeanor or even a felony, which was reduced to a misdemeanor, or the case is expunged and it's over 10 years old. In cases like that, we will bring them in and interview and make sure that we're very comfortable with how the person has grown and become someone different. The other would be is issues of any type of obvious mental health concerns or that the neighbors are indicating that, hey, they really just haven't made a change. So there's really some good thought process that goes into it when we make those decisions.
Now, Sheriff Mims, in Fresno County, are there any things that are, you know, some kind of conviction that's automatically, that's it, you're disqualified? Or how do you look? Are you looking on a case-by-case basis?
Case-by-case. Every single one of them is a case-by-case basis. And in fact, for instance, is there an offense? I don't think I've ever had anyone convicted of homicide, for instance, that's ever applied for us to even right. make that decision. But no, we don't. There's no automatic. We take a look at it. Recent criminal activity, we look at very, very closely.
How do you define it? Would that be like a year, 3 years, 5 years?
Yes, especially if somebody is still on probation.
Right.
You know, that all has to be all over and done with for me to even consider it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So but it's the same as Sheriff Boudreaux, though. If a length of time has passed and they've shown they haven't been in trouble since then, it could be something when they were young.
Young and foolish.
Young and foolish, and we take that into consideration.
Okay. So Sheriff Christensen, how do you handle that? Any automatically disqualifying events?
Oh, certainly. But again, we evaluate each application on a case-by-case basis. So LiveScan is going to tell us whether or not there's anything in their background we should be concerned about. The Department of Justice is going to issue a clearance letter that tells us whether or not they're eligible to possess firearms. So you refer to the Armed and Prohibited Persons System. That's something that we utilize to determine eligibility. I'm going to look at, first of all, everybody makes mistakes. We're all human. I'm going to take a look at what you did. And I'm going to take a look at what you've done since then. But if you're someone with an extensive criminal history or repeated offenses like DUI involving alcohol, that's a potential disqualifier because alcohol and firearms are incompatible.
Yeah, it's a lethal combination. Sheriff Mims, I don't want to demote you here. I apologize.
That was a long time ago.
let me ask you about this. You know, These very kind of vague factors they have in state law. Another one of these is something called good cause. That's another factor for granting a concealed carry permit. And one of the things that came up in the state auditor's report was the fact that a lot of people working in the criminal justice system frankly seem to get a pass. They get an automatic. They're kind of allowed to get a concealed carry permit. What do you think about providing concealed carry permits based on a person's occupation?
Well, I'm not sure that it – the audit, first of all, is accurate when it comes to making that allegation. Everybody has a process they must go through to qualify. And in fact, in Fresno County, personal protection is good enough for me when it comes to good cause. I don't have enough deputies to assign to every single person to protect them. So personal protection in my county is good cause. And the way I figured this out, I have a young daughter. And she doesn't carry a lot of money. She doesn't travel at night a lot. She doesn't travel in high crime areas, but she can be victimized just the same as anybody else. So why wouldn't somebody like her be able to get a CCW to protect themselves?
So good cause for you is if you feel in any
self-protection.
Fear, self-protection. Sheriff Christensen, how do you deal with the issue of good cause? I mean, do you look at the person's occupation? Is that the sole determining factor? Is it weighted heavily? How do you look at that?
I look at everything in the application, not just individual parts or pieces. It's all of the facts and circumstances in the application that determines eligibility. But I also recognize self-protection as good cause. You don't need to write a novel to tell me why you should be able to defend yourself or protect yourself from a criminal element.
Okay, so Sheriff Boudreaux, do you have the same approach to good cause? Is self-protection a valid justification?
Well, I think you're talking to three huge supporters of the Second Amendment first and foremost.
Yes, I think I am.
I'm a huge advocate of the Second Amendment, and I don't think that there's one amendment any less important than the other. And so when it comes to the Second Amendment, we have the right to bear arms. And so in my county, is mirroring what the sheriffs have said, self-protection is all you put on my application. That's all you need. You don't need to come in and say you carry large amounts of money at night. You don't have to come in and say that you're checking your wells late at night. I'm assuming that when you've passed that background check and you're in good standing with me and law enforcement, that you're exercising your Second Amendment right, and I should afford that.
Okay. Sheriff Christian, let me ask you this. One of the things I found kind of interesting, curious, was that the state law doesn't specify the minimum number of firearms training you have to have to get a concealed carry. The state law does, however, prohibit requiring more than 16 hours of firearms training for initial applicants. And I found that kind of interesting that they put a cap on it. Is that a good idea?
Well, frankly, I think there ought to be more. I'm a big proponent of firearms training. I want my gun permit holders to be proficient, to know how to safely handle firearms and understand the civil liability associated with carrying concealed firearms. Our program mandates 16 hours, but honestly, if there was a higher limit, I would probably require more than 16 hours.
Okay, we lost you there a little bit, but I think we got your point. But I want to ask Sheriff Boudreaux the same question about this cap on firearms training at 16 hours. Frankly, it doesn't sound like a lot. Is that a good idea to limit the number of training hours?
Well, I believe that you should train yourself. However, that's not my responsibility. My responsibility is to make sure that you get to exercise that Second Amendment. I would hope that you would exercise and go out and train with that weapon. I don't know that.
Do you think training should be voluntary?
I think it should be voluntary. And the reason for that is I don't know where any in the Second Amendment it requires that you train. Now, having said that, I do think
it's about a well-regulated militia, though.
Yeah, and I think that it needs to be a good idea. Quite frankly, I think that's the responsibility of the gun owner.
Okay. So we have a very strong Second Amendment advocate in Sheriff Boudreaux. Sheriff Mims, where do you fall on this issue?
Well, we require 8 hours of training. And I agree that training is very important. In fact, I've talked to several CCW holders who have gone on for enhanced training, and it's great. It's wonderful. One of the things that makes me nervous, though, is when we talk about the legislators getting their hands on trying to adjust the CCW legislation, because that, to me, doesn't mean anything good. It just doesn't.
It worries
mean,
you.
It worries me a lot. It worries me a lot. And remember,
well,
you
to be fair to the state auditor, she didn't say that the law had to be changed. She wasn't advocating that.
Yeah, that makes me nervous. I will say that when you mentioned the well-regulated militia, absolutely. But what we need to remember with our Constitution and the amendments, they talk about individual rights, and that includes the Second Amendment. Those are individual rights, not just a group, like a group of militia.
Okay. That's the way, that's the root, and I'm sure there are other people that probably disagree with you, but that's what our country's about, right? Difference of opinion. Sheriff Boudreaux, let me ask you this. One of the things that were talked about in the audit report was this thing on prohibited persons. Do you have a procedure to keep track of revocations of prohibited persons, and do you report them regularly to the State Justice Department?
We keep a good track of those that would not be eligible within our department. We've actually had those which we have removed the gun privileges from them because they have fallen within some of these categories. It's equally as important to recognize that when we do issue that gun, it's not that it's willy-nilly. It's that we're paying close attention to it. And if you violate the rules surrounding that, I'm one of the first sheriffs that'll take it back away from you.
Okay, I'm assuming other sheriffs do too. We're running up toward the end of this segment, but I want to get another question here, Sheriff Mims, and that is, one of the issues here with the State Auditor's Report is that some of the jurisdictions have policies, but they don't follow them. So how are you assured in Fresno County that the policies that you have are actually being followed? For example, are they in writing? Do you have staff's work being monitored or supervised in some way?
Well, we have we call it in law enforcement a chain of command. So for instance, my CCW unit has a lieutenant and an assistant sheriff, an undersheriff, and then me. So there's a chain of command to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. We also started using a software program called Permitium, and that allows us to track how many we revoke, how many we issue, and it really brings us some information that's important to me. I issue about 200 new CCWs a month. 200 a month.
Is that one of the highest in the state? I think so.
Right, yeah. Right. We have about 15,000 total in Fresno County right now.
Sheriff Boudreaux is saying, no, issue more?
Yeah, no, we issue quite a few gun permits. I'm always trying to catch up with Margaret. we have about 10,000 CCW holders in our county right now.
Wow. And what do you do in your county to make sure that your policies and procedures are being followed?
We're following the same program. We have the same per diem program that she has, and we monitor in the same way.
And so, Sheriff Christian, same thing for you. Do you have a program that you're using or Excel spreadsheet, or how do you handle it?
Yes, sir. I have Permitium, and Permitium allows us—
They got a lock on the market.
Including
They're great.
Yeah, including revocations and denials, and all of that is reported to the Department of Justice.
Okay, very good. Well, up next, we're going to talk about the state's concealed carry laws, and do they need to be tightened, loosened, or remain the same? I think we're going to know what the answer to that, but we're going to ask the question anyway. That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
You're listening to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition on KMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kepler with the Matty Institute. We're talking to Tulare County Sheriff Mike Boudreaux, Stanislaus County Sheriff Adam Christensen, and Fresno County Sheriff Margaret Mims about granting concealed carry permits. That's generally done on a county-by-county basis. So, Sheriff Christensen, let me start with you. Is there anything that you think in the current state law on concealed carry that needs to be done to improve that law? I mean, for example, should the state be setting some universal standards? Like, an example I would give you is, say, military training automatically qualifies as firearms training. Is that something that maybe just to kind of create some uniform standards might make some sense?
I don't think the state legislature or anybody else should get involved in something that is strictly at the discretion of the sheriff. The sheriffs themselves all have a different view or a different policy. Most of us are the same. Some are different. It depends on geographics and politics. But anytime I'm with Sheriff Mims, anytime the state legislature gets involved, all it does is it creates unfunded mandates and problems for us. The system right now works well. There's nothing wrong with it. I've been issuing gun permits my entire career as sheriff for the last 12 years, and I've never had a problem with a gun permit owner.
Okay, so I'm going to keep pressing on this just for sake of argument. So as Sheriff Boudreaux, in Tulare County, you have a residency requirement. Should there be certain types of documentation that qualify statewide to meet that requirement of residency?
Well, we do that locally. We make sure that they have a bill that indicates where they're at and where they live, and that their license or some type of identification verifies that the address that they've given it correlates with their permit. That's currently done. I think one thing that you could do to help CCWs in the state is to immediately repeal the CCW law that doesn't allow us to carry CCWs on school campuses. That'd be really good.
Okay, which is a conversation for another day. You open up that can of worms. Let's stay just on CCWs generally for now. But Sheriff Mims, let me ask you this. So one of the issues has been, and I think it was with the Sacramento sheriff, was that, are these policies in writing? Do you have checklists to make sure that the policies are being followed? Is that something that the law should say, okay, county sheriffs, make up your own policies and procedures, but let's make sure they're, number one, in writing so everybody in your staff knows what they're supposed to be doing, and number two, have a checklist so when they're reviewing an application, they check off, yes, the residency, yes, good, character, et cetera. What do you think about that?
Well, one good thing about our software that all three of us use is there is a checklist. So it has a checklist. We got the life scan. We have the certificate. They've provided the training. So that checklist is built into the software program.
Because that you're doing, you'd argue, because you're a good sheriff. But what about, we always worry about the person who's not doing their job. Well, should that be a state requirement that everybody that does this?
What I have to say about that is every 4 years, the public in that county can elect somebody else to do the different job. We have the mother of all auditors, and that's the people in our counties. And that's the way I feel about it, that the people can make a decision on who runs the sheriff's office every 4 years.
You know, and again, the state auditor also made that point, that if you don't like the way it's being done, then change the sheriff. But that leads to another question, which I think is really interesting. You know, a concealed carry permit, if you issue it in Tulare County, Fresno County, wherever, it's good statewide. And you may have certain politics in Tulare County and Fresno County and Stanislaus, you know, that are trend toward pro-Second Amendment, you know, grant these. But you may have other jurisdictions, like think of the Bay Area, for example, that are very much the opposite. They don't want concealed carry. They feel that it's more of a threat to them than a protection. So how do you respond to those who argue that, you know, Fresno County Sheriff or Tulare County Sheriff shouldn't be allowed to make decisions that impact people in other jurisdictions that don't agree with that? So, for example, you grant in Tulare County, Sheriff Boudreau, someone a concealed carry. Person in San Francisco wants it to be more strict. You're basically, if they want it, they can basically get it. In San Francisco, they're saying, no, they should have all these strict requirements. How do you respond to that person who's saying, you know what, I'm a resident of the Bay Area, I'm losing local control here because someone in Tulare County is making a decision that's impacting me?
Well, I think, for one, they would just be visiting anyway. You have to live in the county in which you possess your concealed weapons permit. And two, I guess the argument would fall back on what, you know, we've really been discussing all day, is that you really can't override your Second Amendment right. And that truly is that they have the right to bear that arm. The sheriff in the county under the laws has the right and ability to provide to good law-abiding citizens a concealed weapons permit. And back to Christensen's point, and I would argue that same point, we have 10,000 concealed weapon permits in Tulare County, and we're hoping to have more. But of those 10,000 over the time since I've been sitting sheriff for about 5 years now, 4 years in elected term and then 1 year as an appointed. But in that 5 year time span, we have had absolutely zero incidents, because I think that we do a really good job of weeding out what would be a bad gun carrier and one who abides by the law and respects those that he carries the gun with.
Yeah, you know, it's what's interesting about that. I think you're just trying to think of how the other side would respond. Is they're saying, you know, you're saying this is their constitutional right, but it's your definition of what that constitutional right means. Not there's a disagreement of how broad Second Amendment rights are. So you're imposing, they would argue, you're imposing your definition of Second Amendment on them. I mean, how do you respond to that? Because they're feeling, listen, we don't want concealed carry. We feel it's a threat. One of the things you were mentioning, which we didn't get into, and I'm glad we're not, frankly, is concealed carry on school campuses. And there are some people that are going to be, parents are going to be very much opposed to that. Others will say, maybe in Tulare, absolutely, let's do it. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think the proof's in the pudding. I mean, if you take a look at the narrative of the Second Amendment, I don't think that we're going so far outside the definition of what different interpretations would be. I think it's very clear that the ability to do so is well established within the Bill of Rights.
You know, one of the things I would suggest, because I'm a lawyer, is that nothing is clearly established. We were fighting about everything. We've been fighting everything for 200 years. I'm fighting it for another 200, I'm sure.
Well, then we take it to court. But currently, now as it stands, we as sheriffs get to issue CCWs.
Let me ask you, Sheriff Mims, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, this idea that, you know, of local control, that maybe a concealed carry permit, fine if you want it in Fresno County, or Tulare County, fine. But it's good for the county. It shouldn't be able to cross county lines.
Well, it's already been decided by the courts. The Heller decision said that's an individual right to be able to carry firearms. That I think that's very important. And most of the time, I think you need to remember that it's a concealed firearm permit. Nobody should know you've got that gun. It should be concealed. And so, like the other sheriffs, I've had two incidents that a concealed weapons permit holder from Fresno County has actually used the gun in self-defense. And both times it has been held as self-defense.
You know, you bring up a really interesting question. That is, what if a person has a concealed carry permit, but they don't conceal the weapon?
Then it's not legal.
Words, so would that person be arrested?
They could be.
That's in violation of the concealed carry permit.
If somebody, you know, breaks the rules on carrying a concealed, if it's not concealed, I'd probably pull that permit because it's supposed to be concealed. Nobody should know you have the weapon. And I want to get back to the point, when you think about how many concealed weapons permits and for how long we've had in Fresno County, never have I had anyone get into trouble for illegal use of a firearm. Never. And I mean, I have the two cases where self-defense was used. In fact, just 2 weeks ago in the city of Fresno, a man walking, doing his daily walk along a canal was attacked by someone with a board. He was hitting him with the board. And the victim was a CCW holder from the sheriff's office. He pulled his weapon and shot his assailant. And it's clear-cut case of self-defense. 73-year-old victim.
Hmm. Yeah. So, Sergeant Christian, I'm gonna let you take a swing at this question as well. You know, this idea of local control. You have to answer a difficult question in 1 minute. Sorry about that. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, thanks for demoting me again. But
I said sheriff, didn't I?
No.
Oh my gosh. I apologize.
Let's refocus.
I'm going to get a ticket here in these counties because they're going to see my car coming.
You might. You might. Let's refocus the issue for a moment. The issuance of a gun permit is simply a waiver of criminal liability. It is illegal. There is criminal liability for carrying a concealed firearm. All we're doing is issuing a permit that waives that criminal liability and allows law-abiding citizens an opportunity to protect themselves from the criminal element in our communities.
Okay, well, that makes it very clear and probably a good place to end. I want to thank our guests for joining us. Stanislaus County Sheriff Adam Christensen.
Thank you.
Yeah, you've been promoted. Tulare County Sheriff Mike Boudreau and Fresno County Sheriff Margaret Rims. Thanks all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
The views and opinions expressed in the Matter Report are those of the individuals participating in the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the California Channel or the Matty Institute. If you'd like to share your thoughts about the points and opinions expressed in the Matty Report, visit our website at mattyinstitute.org.
The Matty Report, Valley Views Edition, is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio, Cumulus Media, and the nonpartisan Matty Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on politics and important public policy issues. This is KMJ.